Hey, Derek here from pathofreason.com. Basically, we've been working on this project for a while, and we would like to present it to you and see what you think. Basically, we recommend that you get a Bible and a notebook and follow along. You know, feel free to pause and take notes at any time. And, you know, feel free after listening to this to let us know what you think. So anyway, this is entitled The False Miracle of Jesus. Did the miracles of Jesus really happen like the Bible indicates? Is the Bible misleading in any way? Most Christians will tell you that yes, the miracles of Jesus were actual events, and the Holy Bible is the inerrant and the inspired Word of God. The word inerrant means without error and infallible. Infallible means incapable of error, not liable to mislead or deceive. If you ask any Christian if the Bible misleads in any way, they will most always say no, it does not. While we recognize that most Christians find it utterly impossible to think anything in the Bible could be false, we simply feel that they don't give it the same critical analysis that they do with other works of literature. With this argument, we're not trying to disprove the existence of God, but rather focus on one particular miracle story and dissect it critically, applying history, science, logic, and just plain old common sense. The story is commonly referred to as the healing of the boy with an unclean spirit, or Jesus heals a boy with a demon. The story takes place directly after the Transfiguration story in the Gospels of Mark, Luke, and Matthew. We hope that in doing a horizontal Bible study, we can establish the following points. On the basis of this story, point number one, the boy's condition was not caused by demonic possession or an unclean spirit, as the Bible indicates. Number two, Jesus was not omniscient and did nothing divine in this story. Omniscience means having infinite awareness, understanding, and insight, possessing universal and complete knowledge. Number three, the Bible is not inerrant or divinely inspired. 2 Timothy 3:16 says, all scripture is inspired by God and profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, and for training in righteousness. Many Christians cite that verse when discussing the validity of the Bible. If only one miracle story is incorrect or misleads us in any way, it reasonably follows that the Bible is not inerrant and therefore imperfect. And number four, this particular error is not a matter of translation. While we agree that sometimes things are lost in translation from one language to another, we're going to show that this particular error in the Bible is not at all a matter of mistranslation. And finally, the gospel writers wrote this story on the basis of an unknown phenomenon. So basically, we're going to begin by reading from the Gospel of Mark. Mark is considered to be the first written gospel. For this study, we're going to be using the Revised Standard Version of the Bible. We're going to be reading the first description of this story taken from the Gospel of Mark. The Gospel of Mark is considered by most scholars to be the earliest of the canonical Gospels, written between 60 and 70 AD. Mark is also a Hellenistic gospel written in Chionic Greek, primarily for the Greek-speaking residents of the Roman Empire. Again, we're going to use the Revised Standard Version of the Bible, which is considered to be, by most scholars, as one of the most readable and literal translations of the ancient texts into English. But again, you can use any translation that you have available. So, I will begin by reading Mark chapter 9, verses 14 through 29. It's called The Healing of the Boy with a Spirit. When they came to the disciples, they saw a great crowd around them, and some scribes arguing with them. When the whole crowd saw them, they were immediately overcome with awe, and they ran forward to greet him. He asked them, "What are you arguing about with them?" Someone from the crowd answered him, "Teacher, I brought you my son. He has a spirit that makes him unable to speak, and whenever it seizes him, it dashes him down, and he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to cast it out, but they could not do so." He answered them, "You faithless generation, how much longer must I be among you? How much longer must I put up with you? Bring him to me." And they brought the boy to him. When the spirit saw him, it immediately convulsed the boy, and he fell on the ground and rolled about, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the father, "How long has this been happening to him?" And he said, "From childhood. It has often cast him into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you are able to do anything, have pity on us and help us." Jesus said to him, "If you are able, all things can be done for the one who believes." Immediately the father of the child cried out, "I believe, help my unbelief." When Jesus saw that a crowd came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, "You spirit that keeps this boy from speaking and hearing, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." After crying out and convulsing him terribly, it came out, and the boy was like a corpse, so that most of them said, "He is dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he was able to stand. When he had entered the house, his disciples asked him privately, "Why could we not cast it out?" He said to them, "This kind can only come out through prayer." Now, according to the Bible, what just occurred in this story? Well, the story begins as Jesus is met coming down from his time on the mountain by a crowd of people. A man from the crowd indicates that his son has a spirit that makes him unable to speak. Sometimes the spirit convulses him and causes him to foam at the mouth. Sometimes it even casts him into fire or water. According to Mark in verse 20, the spirit even convulses the boy when Jesus approaches. This is almost showing that the spirit even possibly recognizes who Jesus is. Now, just giving this story a quick read, most people just assume that it's a typical miracle story. Jesus casts out a demon, he proves that he's the Son of God, and he shows that with prayer anyone can cast out demons. Well, basically we're going to come back to this story later, but for now we're going to read the same story as taken from the Gospel of Luke and compare it with the story in Mark. The Gospel of Luke is not considered to be an eyewitness account. Rather, it was written based on the Gospel of Mark, and some think the lost Gospel of Q. There's some debate on its actual written date, but it's ranged anywhere between 70 and 90 AD. It is also written in Greek. I will begin reading from Luke chapter 9, verse 37 through 43. On the next day, when they had come down from the mountain, a great crowd met him. Just then, a man from the crowd shouted, "Teacher, I beg you to look at my son. He's my only child." Suddenly, a spirit seizes him, and all at once he shrieks. It convulses him until he foams at the mouth. It mauls him and will scarcely leave him. "I begged your disciples to cast it out, but they could not." Jesus answered, "You faithless and perverse generation, how much longer must I be with you and bear with you? Bring your son here." While he was coming, the demon dashed into the ground in convulsions, but Jesus rebuked the unclean spirit, healed the boy, and gave him back to his father, and all were astounded at the greatness of God. Now, this account, although a bit shorter than the account in Mark, still gives us the same basic story minus a few verses. As you will notice, the same phrase, "you faithless and perverse generation," or a variation of the same, appears exactly in each account. So according to Luke, what's causing this to happen to the boy? The Gospels indicate that it's an unclean spirit and even refers to it as a demon. Luke 9:42 indicates that when Jesus approached the boy, the demon dashed him to the ground in convulsions. Jesus then goes on to rebuke or cast out the demon from the boy, and all were astounded at the greatness of God. This story, unlike Mark's account, doesn't go into much detail about what happens next, but it does explain in a later chapter of Luke what supposedly happens to unclean spirits after they leave a person. It says in Luke 11:24-26, "When the unclean spirit has gone out of a person, it wanders through waterless regions looking for a resting place. But not finding any, it says, 'I will return to my house from which I came.' When it comes, it finds it swept and put in order. Then it goes and brings seven other spirits more evil than itself, and they enter and live there. And the last state of the person is worse than the first." These verses are showing that spirits don't stay with their victims all the time. They leave, wander around waterless regions looking for a resting place. They eventually decide to return to their host and cause another spiritual attack on them. This shows that the victims are not afflicted on a continuous basis, but rather at random moments and at random times. In some cases, the attack can be progressively worse than the last. Presumably, it's not clear to the victim when the attacks will take place. We are now going to describe the symptoms the Bible says the boy was suffering from and put them into a modern context. Now, imagine for a moment you're standing in line at a grocery store and all of a sudden the boy standing in line in front of you begins to shriek loudly, falls to the ground, starts foaming at the mouth, rolling around, begins having convulsions, his body begins seizing, and he cannot speak during this entire event. What do you think would be happening to this boy? Would you think that this person was being attacked by a demon right before your eyes? Or would you think it was something else? And if it was something else, what was it? Now, based on our studies, we are going to show that this boy was afflicted with not an unclean spirit or a demon, but rather a condition known as epilepsy. Epilepsy is a chronic neurological disorder that is characterized by recurrent, unprovoked seizures. While there are many different diseases such as Angelman syndrome that include seizure disorders, we're going to focus on epilepsy primarily for this article. So, I mean, although there are a lot of different seizure disorders out there, we're just going to focus on the term epilepsy. Now, I've included a link to our epilepsy fact sheet so you can follow along comparing symptoms and also find out more about the signs and symptoms of epilepsy. You may want to pause the recording and refer to these sheets, perhaps even print them out for your own use, but feel free to do your own independent research on this topic. You know, we recommend referring to medical journals or even ask a physician if you have the ability to do so. So don't just take our word for it. If there's anything about epilepsy that we haven't covered or you need to research or you want to learn, obviously search for yourself. Now, we're going to compare the symptoms described in the Bible to our known understanding of epilepsy verse by verse. Now, hopefully you've read over our epilepsy fact sheets a little bit. So starting first, the spirit makes the boy unable to speak. In Mark 9:17, during an epileptic seizure, a person becomes unconscious and physically unable to speak or communicate at any time. Number two, suddenly a spirit seizes him and all at once he shrieks. Luke 9:39. People with epilepsy are known to yell or cry out before they collapse into the seizure. Anyone who has witnessed an epileptic seizure will tell you that this can happen right before the person begins seizing. Number three, it seizes him and dashes him to the ground. He foams at the mouth and grinds his teeth. When a person has a seizure, they become unconscious, thus causing the person to fall on the ground. Epileptics are known to grind their teeth and foam at the mouth. It convulses him until he foams at the mouth. Luke 9:39. Again, people who have seizures are known to excessively salivate and foam at the mouth. Number five, Jesus asked the Father, how long has this been happening to him? And he said, from childhood. Mark 9:21. Symptoms of epilepsy usually begin to show during childhood. Number six, the spirit dashed into the ground in convulsions. Luke 9:42. Symptoms of epileptic seizures obviously include convulsions. It has often cast him into fire and water. Mark 9:22. When a person begins to have an epileptic seizure, they lose consciousness. If they're standing or doing a task of some kind, they collapse. When they collapse, they're at risk of falling into any object around them. This could include a fire or perhaps a body of water. Two places which people at the time would be near often. Epilepsy can occur at any given moment, so injuries can occur when the person falls. Number eight, the boy was like a corpse, so that some of them said he was dead. Mark 9:26. Once a seizure is over, a person may feel extremely worn out or tired and may even fall into a deep sleep for a long period of time. It is also difficult for people to breathe during seizures, resulting in discoloration in the face and lips. This would give the impression that the boy was dead. We have also included a video of a man having an epileptic seizure to give you an idea of what actually occurs when one is taking place. Now, if you want to watch this video and come back, or pause it, or maybe you've already watched it, just watch this video. Do you see how the epileptic seizure this patient was experiencing happened at just a random moment? Do you also notice how the patient in this video groaned loudly as soon as the seizure began? His body became rigid at first, then he began convulsing. Did you also notice the nurse sucking the excess saliva out of his mouth? He also did not move and appeared to either be sleeping or dead after the seizure took place. Do you see how this almost perfectly fits the symptoms the boy in the Bible was experiencing? Now, imagine if you are living 2,000 years ago. You have no knowledge of neurological disorders or the technology we have available today. Imagine you were witnessing this event back then. How do you think you would have interpreted seeing something like this? How do you think people living back then would have interpreted this unusual phenomenon? Now, we have shown that the symptoms of the boy were strikingly similar to epileptic seizures, but the Bible still indicates that it was a demon causing this to happen. The Bible even goes so far as to anthropomorphize the demon by indicating that it is recognized Jesus and caused the boy to convulse. Jesus approaches the boy, the spirit sees Jesus and reacts. Jesus physically addresses the spirit in Mark saying, "You, spirit," and the spirit reacts to Jesus' command by convulsing the boy terribly once again. These verses show a clear interaction between Jesus and the spirit. So if the boy had epilepsy, who was Jesus interacting with? Finally, we're going to read from the Gospel of Matthew, the third and final account of the story, to see if we can get a third perspective. The Gospel of Matthew is considered by most Christians to have been written by Matthew the Evangelist. Matthew writes for Greek-speaking Judeo-Christians. The Gospel itself is dated anywhere from 70 to 100 AD. It is also written in Chionic Greek. This is the last account of this story, as it does not appear in the Gospel of John. I will now read Matthew chapter 17, verses 14 through 20. When they came to the crowd, a man came to him, knelt before him, and said, "Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is an epileptic and he suffers terribly. He often falls into the fire and into the water, and I brought him to your disciples, but they could not cure him." Jesus answered, "You faithless and perverse generation, how much longer must I be with you? How much longer must I put up with you? Bring him here to me." And Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of him, and the boy was cured instantly. Then the disciples came to Jesus privately and said, "Why could we not cast it out?" And he said to them, "Because of your little faith. For truly I tell you, if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, 'Move from here to there,' and it will move, and nothing will be impossible." Now we see here that the Bible directly calls it epilepsy. Now why would the Bible call it epilepsy and still refer to it as a demonic possession? Because we know now that demons don't cause epilepsy. Is this just a matter of translation? Well, when scholars translate words from one language to another, they have to find out what certain words mean in their original language and translate them to the best translation in another language. Some people feel that when words are translated, they lose their original meaning. But just to be sure that it's not a mere translation error, we're going to take a look at 9 alternate translations of the Bible into English and see if we can figure out the root word of epilepsy. Obviously, we have the Revised Standard Version, but we're going to read through multiple versions of this particular verse and see, you know, if we can pick it apart. Now, the Revised Standard Version says, from Matthew 17:15, "Lord, have mercy on my son, for he's an epileptic and he suffers terribly. He often falls into the fire and into the water." The King James Version says, "Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is a lunatic and sore vexed, and oft times he falleth into the fire and oft into the water." The New International Version says, "Lord, have mercy on my son. He has seizures and is suffering greatly. He often falls into the fire or into the water." The New Living Translation says, "Lord, have mercy on my son, because he has seizures and suffers terribly. He often falls into the fire or into the water." The English Standard Version, "Lord, have mercy on my son, for he's an epileptic and he suffers terribly, for he often falls into the fire and into the water." The New American Standard Bible says, "Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is a lunatic and he is very ill, for he often falls into the fire and into the water." The Hebrew Names Version says, "Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is an epileptic and he suffers grievously, for he often falls into the fire and often into the water." The New King James Version says, "Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is an epileptic, moonstruck, and suffers severely, for he often falls into the fire and into the water. The Latin Vulgate says, Domine misere ille me quae lunaticus. I'm going to stop there because I don't know how to speak Latin and it doesn't sound right, but basically, lunaticus. That's the word we need to remember. Now, you'll notice that some of the verses refer to the boy as being an epileptic. Some verses call him a lunatic or moonstruck or sore vexed. Well, the next step is dissecting the words epileptic, lunatic, moonstruck, and sore vexed from an etymological perspective. The actual word that appears in the New Testament text is selenia zomai, which means to be epileptic. The word epilepsy itself originates from the Greek word epilepsia, seizure, from epi, which means upon, and lepsis, which means to seize or take hold of. Literally, to be subject to change or decay, it was then translated into lunatic or moonstruck. Now, lunatic is taken from the Latin word lunaticus, which means moonstruck, which gains its stem from the word luna, which means moon. When the Gospels were translated from Greek into Latin during the publishing of the Latin Vulgate Bible, the word was changed from selenia zomai to lunaticus or lunatic. When a person was considered a lunatic or moonstruck, it meant they were affected by the changes of the moon, thought to be a curse from the Greek goddess of the moon, Selene. As you will see, selenia zomai contains the root word Selene. Ancient Greeks thought that you were cursed with epilepsy by offending the moon goddess Selene and often referred to epileptics as lunatics. Sore vexed basically means sore, which suffering from body pain, and vexed means to bring distress or suffering to, plague or afflict. A person who is considered sore vexed was meant to be suffering from some kind of affliction on a recurrent basis. Epilepsy obviously occurs on a recurring basis. Now, the Romans referred to epilepsy as morbus sacer, the name given to epilepsy because epileptics were sometimes supposed to be divinely inspired, also known as the falling sickness. Morbus is the Latin word for disease. They also called it morbus catechus, or the falling sickness. It was also used during medieval times to describe people with falling sickness because the person suffering usually fell down at random moments, and it was referred to as falling sickness. Morbus Herculeus was another description of epilepsy, also known as the Hercules sickness, for about 2,000 years. Now, the reason for this is because of the famous play by Euripides. The main character, Hercules, seems to be suffering from many of the symptoms of epilepsy. Now, the reason we included the Roman description is because we want to emphasize the fact that many cultures had very superstitious beliefs about this particular condition. For the next part, feel free to refer to the superstition history of epilepsy fact sheet we've included in our links. But again, we encourage you to fact check on any of the terms or the people we mentioned in the following. Search any of the references or terms or the people and educate yourselves. The first thing we need to do is ask ourselves, was it possible for the writers of the Gospels to know exactly what caused epilepsy? Well, from a historical point, no. Epilepsy itself was not discovered to be a neurological disorder until 1859, when John Hewlings Jackson suggested that epilepsy was the result of a neurological activity that radiated to the rest of the body, thus causing epileptic seizures. Jackson is known as the father of English neurology. Jackson wasn't the first person to suggest that epilepsy was not the result of supernatural forces. In fact, the father of modern medicine, Hippocrates, wrote in 400 BC his description of what he thought was the condition known as the sacred disease. He indicated that because of man's inability to comprehend the disease, they were unable to realize what really caused it. Obviously, in 400 BCE, technology and scientific understanding was not what it was today. He writes, "It is thus with regard to the disease called sacred. It appears to me to be nowise more divine, no more sacred than other diseases, but has a natural cause from the originates like other affections. Men regard its nature and cause as divine from ignorance and wonder, because it is not at all like other diseases. and this notion of its divinity is kept up by their inability to comprehend it. What Hippocrates is saying here is that mankind regarded this as divine because they had no other explanation for the condition. How else could they have explained it? They didn't have the knowledge or the technology. Hippocrates would later go on to say that to attribute this condition to the gods was to speak ill of the gods. Unfortunately, it took over 2,000 years for people to get on the same page as Hippocrates. Now, as mentioned before, how do you think you would have interpreted a seizure if you were living 2,000 years ago? Would you have had the ability to know it was a neurological disorder? The Bible indicates that in early Judaic culture, people who were considered unclean were set apart from normal society. You can find many examples of this in the Old Testament. This would include lepers, the handicapped, and even epileptics. During the Middle Ages, people believed that if you witnessed an epileptic seizure, you could catch the disease. Epileptics were feared and ignored, and thus were not part of normal society. The superstition was so strong that in 1494, the Malleus Maleficarum was published under papal authority. It was written by two Dominican friars. This book had inclusion and exclusion criteria for witches, many of which uncannily described seizure disorders. It also said that the witches could cause epilepsy to develop. This book itself brought on a wave of persecution and torture that led to the deaths of an estimated 100 to 600,000 women, although exact estimates are not really certain. Another example of persecution amongst epileptics came during the Holocaust. Forced sterilizations began in 1934. And altogether, an estimated 300,000 to 400,000 people were sterilized under the law. A diagnosis of feeble-mindedness provided the grounds in the majority of cases. Today, many third-world African cultures still believe epilepsy is a manifestation of supernatural forces. Some still think that they are being possessed by evil spirits or the spirits of their dead ancestors. So, what have we shown here? If this boy had epilepsy, then it was not caused by demonic possession or a possession by an unclean spirit. Epilepsy is a neurological disorder as proven by medical science and is not caused by an evil force of any kind. Since the Bible implies that demons are responsible for epilepsy, the Bible is wrong. We know now that epilepsy is not caused by demonic possession. Therefore, if the Bible says it is, then the Bible is wrong. It also stands to reason that if the Bible was divinely inspired by God, then he should have foreseen the horrible treatment epileptics would have received for the next couple of thousand years because of this misunderstanding. The forced sterilizations, the burning women at the stakes. Obviously, having Jesus correct this superstition from the beginning would have saved thousands and thousands of lives. This calls into question the supposed omniscience or divinity of Jesus himself. If Jesus was omniscient or all-knowing, why didn't he point out the huge mistakes people were making about this condition? Surely, if this event actually happened as the Bible indicates, he would have educated his followers and dispelled the myth about demons causing epilepsy. If he knew and didn't say anything, then he's lying by omission. It's like having a cure for cancer, but keeping it to yourself and pretending that something else is causing it. The whole logic behind this is preposterous. And if Jesus knew there was no unclean spirit or demon, then was Jesus just acting? Was he simply pretending to cast out a demon? I mean, clearly the gospel goes to great lengths to show interaction between Jesus and the spirit. And if there isn't a spirit there, what was Jesus doing? Who was he interacting with? It seems far more likely that the gospel writers wrote this story based on an unknown phenomenon, that unknown phenomenon being the affliction as described in the Bible. For thousands of years, a superstitious stigma has existed in various ancient cultures in regards to epilepsy. Only until very recently in human history have we discovered that supernatural forces are not responsible for this horrible affliction of the mind. We've shown that this is not limited to one or two people inside a group, but hundreds of thousands of people suffer from this condition. If you can imagine, this must have been a big problem affecting people living during this time. The people being ignorant of its true causes were probably searching for an explanation as well as a way to solve the phenomenon. As we've shown earlier in reference to Luke 11, 24 through 26. The writers of the Gospels even had an explanation of what happens to these unclean spirits after they left the victim. As you can imagine, when these stories were being told to large crowds, the question of what happens to the spirits when they leave a person had to come up. As you can see, an explanation to fit the situation was created. The spirit leaves the person, wanders around the waterless areas, and then eventually returns to the victim for another spiritual attack. It gets the help of other demons, and the next attack is progressively worse. Do you see how this fits as the perfect example for epilepsy? This condition isn't very easy to explain to the ignorant mind. As Hippocrates pointed out, people simply did not have the ability to understand it, so they attributed it to the divine. The early Judeo-Christians were no exception. This explanation of demonic possession became part of their cultural superstitions. The Greeks blamed the goddess of the moon Selene, so when a person was afflicted with something like epilepsy, who would the Judeo-Christians attribute it to? An evil force. So, for every problem, you have to create an explanation and solution. The evil side causes the bad thing to happen, while the good is the countermeasure to the bad. And who did the early Judeo-Christians attribute the good to? Jesus. These stories were told by word of mouth in large groups and gatherings. Most people living during this time did not have the ability to read or write. Also, as you can imagine, when you are trying to convert someone to your religion, you need to give examples of why the pros outweigh the cons. Therefore, you create an elaborate story to show the glory of God in hopes of gaining converts. It seems more likely from the gospel writer's standpoint that Jesus was the solution and the answer to this. To them, he provided an answer they were looking for. These people were unable to foresee the advancements in science that would eventually solve the mystery of falling sickness. When telling people the stories of Jesus, this would have been the perfect way to convince them of his power. Jesus not only can cure this, but you can too, by prayer and putting your faith in him. To us, this story never really happened. It was a creation in the minds of the peoples representing the views of a single culture. Jesus never healed this boy, because if he was, he would have done it the right way. If Jesus was really who the Christians say he was, he would have not withheld information from mankind in this fashion. Now, if you or your loved ones were suffering from epilepsy, would you simply pray or have faith, or would you go to a doctor? If you go to a doctor, you're blatantly rejecting what Jesus commands. Jesus says the only way to cure something like this was through prayer. I mean, do the same rules back then not apply to today? I mean, does this really make sense to anyone? So, according to this story, Jesus was just as ignorant as the rest of the people living during this time period. So it is far more likely that he was a symbolic representation of salvation for these people, salvation by faith. Faith that had the ability to make the unclean clean. Thank you.